May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you, O Holy One. Please be seated. I suppose it could be my advancing age, but these days I'm hearing myself groan a lot more. I groan when I stand up after an hour or so of weeding or planting. I groan when lifting heavy loads. I even find myself groaning when I get up out of my lazy boy recliner on the way to the refrigerator. Groaning seems to be an increasingly common feature of my life. In today's letter from Paul to the Romans, the word groaning also makes an appearance. No, I don't think Paul is complaining about his creaky knees or his tired back. Rather, Paul uses the Greek word that's translated into English as groaning to express something much deeper, more universal, and a more existential reality. We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we wait for adoption and the redemption of our bodies, or ourselves, as it's often translated. This kind of groaning suggests something far beyond the groaning of my petty physical complaints. Paul equates this kind of groaning with the experience of being in labor. Of course, neither Paul and nor I can speak from any personal experience of what labor might be like, though I know that many of you here can, and at least one of us fairly recently. Having accompanied Laura through the births of our three children, I do know that labor is often an overwhelming, all-encompassing, and unimaginably difficult state of being, and often is described to be the most intense kind of pain and suffering that a human endures. So it seems very significant that Paul has chosen this metaphor of groaning in labor to make his point. Perhaps it is because the groaning of labor is a form of pain and suffering that is leading somewhere. It is pain that will come to an end, and that hopefully will usher in a new life for the parents and the community waiting with expectation for the little one to arrive. It is a pain that comes with much hope and anticipation of a new reality waiting to be born. In this one sentence, Paul is trying to express something profoundly important about the human condition. It is an escapable reality that there is suffering in this life. No one's life passes without pain, without challenges, and at times even anguish. We all have our losses. We're all wounded in some way. And depending on where you're born, the color of your skin, whom you love, or many other factors, you may be forced to endure more or less of the world's pain and suffering than some others do. Paul is urging the community in Rome to remember, however, that our suffering and indeed our groaning are not meaningless or without hope, nor need we be isolated in them. Indeed, our inward groans are profoundly connected to the groaning of all creation from all time, says Paul. We, along with all of our fellow creatures, plants and animals, water and air, rocks and sky, and the entire cosmos are caught up together in an unfolding drama of yearning to express the fullness of who we were created to be and to return to full unity with God, our Creator. And this, like the process of being born, does involve some suffering. Much to my surprise, I discovered that the word groan appears 39 times in most of the Bible translations. The majority of these take place in the prophets and the Psalms, and they usually reflect a sense of struggle and longing and yearning to be born anew into wholeness, into redemption, for reconciliation or justice. On some occasions, groaning is an individual experience, but more often it is a collective one. In Paul's letter to the Romans that we heard today, however, it's the first time that the word groaning is used to express our shared suffering and yearning with all of creation. We struggle together. We yearn for fullness together. We share the same origins and we share the same destiny with all of life. Our redemption, or adoption as Paul calls it, is not from creation, it is with creation. To be attuned to the suffering of the world, our human brothers and sisters, our fellow creatures, oceans and forests, to suffer or groan with all of creation is to live in a state of compassion, of suffering with. But suffering is by no means the whole story, as we share too in the beauty, the mystery, and the joy of all creation. Today's Psalm 104, which we recited in part together, is a moving affirmation of our shared connections to all of the created world. It is a song of praise that, when read in its entirety, is sometimes considered a third creation story, as it recounts the marvels of the cosmos and the wonders of our planet Earth. In this psalm, at some length, the Creator is praised for light, clouds, wind, fire, earth, water, mountains, valleys, thunder, springs, donkeys, wild animals, cattle, plants, crops, wine, trees, birds, junipers, wild goats, the moon and the sun, the seasons, lions, the oceans, and its many creatures and people. 27 different creatures or elements of this wonder-filled world we inhabit are celebrated and named in this psalm. Clearly, the psalmist went to great pains to make a point about the miraculous diversity of creation and to urge us to delight in all life forms, all of the physical expressions of our earth and the wider cosmos, and to recenter ourselves as belonging within them. We are part of this great community of creation in which all being is held together in the embrace of the Creator. And so the psalmist proclaims, "These all look to you to give them their food in due season. When you give to them, they gather it up. When you open your hand, they are filled with good things. When you hide your face, they are dismayed. When you take away their breath, they die and return to their dust. When you send forth your spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the earth." What a beautiful and appropriate passage to contemplate on this Pentecost Sunday. Here we have the wisdom tradition of our ancient scriptures eloquently expressing that God's breath, God's spirit, sustains all life. Humans, yes, for sure, as our reading from Acts dramatically describes, but also donkeys, goats, trees, and birds, bears and eagles, orcas, fungi, spiders, and a whole lot more. All that lives and moves and breathes is animated, sustained, and renewed by the same Spirit that we celebrate today on Pentecost Sunday. So on to the account from Acts. We're told today that all of the disciples were gathered together in one room in Jerusalem. It's been 3 years since Jesus was crucified, and the community of believers still remains small enough to fit into one room. Clearly, there has not been very much growth in this somewhat tentative and often fearful group of followers of Jesus. That is, until now. It turns out that the disciples were gathered together for the celebration of Shavuot, a festival of the spring grain harvest that comes 50 days after Passover. Pentecost, the word, comes from penta, meaning the prefix, meaning 5 or 50. All Jewish families were expected to have at least one representative travel to Jerusalem for the festival, so the neighborhood where the disciples were gathered was well populated by Jews, as it said, from every nation under heaven. By reciting no less than 15 different nations, as Lee managed to make it through in with a great deal of eloquence, the storyteller insists that we appreciate just how diverse the Jewish community was at that time. 15 different nations were named. We can imagine the incredible sights, smells, and sounds that this impressive collection of pilgrims from throughout the Jewish world would have produced. Communication, on the other hand, must have had its challenges. Though one would expect most folks to have spoken at least a couple of languages, including some Hebrew, and perhaps to have known a smattering of words in several more. It is then and within this context that something inexplicable, unexpected, and even for some rather disturbing takes place. This multicultural crowd is drawn to the exuberance spilling out of the home where the disciples are meeting. The disciples, whom over the past 3 years seem to have lacked the courage to engage much beyond their small, insulated group of believers, are moved by the Spirit to speak boldly, and the crowd understands, each of them in their own native language. For those of you who speak more than one language, you know that your mother tongue is always your place of deepest comfort, comprehension, and identity, your linguistic home, so to speak. Heard in their own languages, the proclamations of the disciples would have undoubtedly resonated powerfully in the ears of those who were prepared to hear. The ensuing amazement, confusion, and for even some consternation or cynicism is highly reminiscent of the dynamic that Jesus elicited throughout his life and ministry. From his parables, to his healings, to his chosen associations, Jesus turned the assumed order of things upside down and subverted social structures and conventions. The blind see, the lame walk, the first become last, and the poor become rich. The unclean and the sinner are invited to the intimacy of the table, while respected community leaders are turned away. The world is not as you think it is. In all of these scenarios, a crisis of understanding is provoked so that what we thought we knew begins to disintegrate. What does this mean? Asked those present at Pentecost. A crack begins to open to a new vision, a new set of possibilities, a new understanding. In the Pentecost story, Peter realizes that this crisis provoked by the winds of the Spirit offers a tremendous opportunity. He steps into this breach and draws deeply from the well of Jewish tradition, quoting the prophet Joel. In the last days it will be, God declares, that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and daughters shall prophesy, your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. Even upon my slaves, both men and women, in those days I will pour out my spirit. The spirit in this passage is radically inclusive and highly unpredictable, moving not only through young and old free men, but also through women and slaves as well. Knowing the countercultural potency of such a prospect, Peter identifies the emerging ministry of the small group of followers of Jesus with this radical inclusiveness. The Spirit enables all present to deeply hear the liberating promise of a loving and compassionate God, a liberation that defies definitions and hierarchies that the empire thrives on. From a small marginal group of mostly Galilean men huddled in a private room in Jerusalem, we're told later on in this passage that 3,000 people are now moved to become followers of Jesus. Peter Wolseley describes the significance of this event. The church is born when the Spirit comes and reveals to the disciples the diversity that the church is meant to embody. From Jews in Galilee to Jews from all over, to Gentiles to the ends of the earth, the church is meant to show the richness and beauty of diverse voices singing in harmony for God's glory. We are the church at its best when our unity is shown through our diversity. Today's psalm and the letter of Paul also challenge us further to extend that definition of inclusivity of the kingdom of God and the church to the more than human world as well. It is the same spirit that animates and sustains all life from all time that breaks forth through the disciples on the day of Pentecost. And of course, it is also the same Spirit who moves through all of us gathered here today. And it is the same Spirit who has accompanied us through these past months of transition. And it will be the same Spirit who will be with us as we move forward into a new phase of our community with the arrival of Laurel as our priest. This time, these months, have not been without their growing pains, without some groans here and there. But we are most certainly on the verge of new life after a long period of labor. Are we ready to open our doors to all of the possibilities that this may bring? Maybe not 3,000 new believers. I'm not sure where they would sit in here. But surely a whole host of exciting new possibilities await us that we cannot now even imagine. As descendants of the disciples and the 3,000 who believed on Pentecost, we know that we are part of something much larger than our own individual groans and pains, as challenging and worrisome as those may be. Our groans can become holy groans when we unite them in compassion and solidarity with the suffering of the world, struggling to be born again and again into the full promise of God's shalom. Our lives, this church in all of its diversity, our gardens outside, our wider community, our ailing but still delight-filled planet, those alive now, and those who will breathe on after us. We are all traveling through this life on the breath of God, who moves in us, sustains us, and renews us ever and again. Amen.